If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Events in Syria get worse as Turkey invades northern Syria. The Kurds in that part of the country cut a deal with Bashar Assad for self-protection. And Islamic State prisoners go free while President Trump imposes sanctions on Turkey in response. What are we learning from all this about Donald Trump's foreign policy? Plus, a preview of Tuesday's Democratic presidential debate, the first debate in a month. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot here with my colleagues, Kyle Peterson. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, hello.
And Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
Let's talk about Syria first. The President of the United States making a decision about 10 days ago now to withdraw U.S. forces from northern Syria. At the same time saying, warning to the president of Turkey, Recep Erdogan, that he should not invade. But in fact, Erdogan ignored that and has invaded. And the consequences have spilled out in ways that many people predicted would happen, particularly release of hundreds, if not thousands, of ISIS prisoners who had been Islamic State prisoners who had been in Kurdish custody, and a ferocious opposition to Donald Trump's moves here at home from both Republicans and Democrats. Bill, how much trouble here is this created for American foreign policy?
Well, I think it's created a lot. We have Walter Russell Mead today talking about Secretary Pompeo's challenges. Look, it on the one hand, you have Donald Trump believing, and he's correct, that he's fulfilling a campaign promise to pull out. On the other hand, you see all these unintended consequences. Actually, a lot of people warned about the consequences for example, captured ISIS fighters and so forth. So we don't really know the full extent of the mischief that's going to happen. And I think that it's the president just thinks that's way over there. These people have been fighting for centuries. All true. But he thinks that somehow we can separate ourselves from that. You know, as a global power, we just have interests all over the world. And it's that's where I think there's a fundamental disagreement with the president. He thinks you can just recede from certain areas.
And he's continuing to make that point. He's invoking the line that comes from, I think, Rand Paul, that we have to stop these endless wars. I don't think that this is going to stop the war. I think it's the only difference is that the United States troops aren't going to be in harm's way. Although, interestingly enough, there was some shelling by the Turks that was dangerously close to U.S. positions as they invaded northern Syria before the U.S. Troops were able to pull out. And of course, the U.S. hadn't really been undertaking casualties in the north there. They'd been working with the Kurds. U.S. officials had been negotiating with the Turks and the Kurds to create a safe zone there. What precipitated this, Kyle, was that Erdogan told Trump in that phone call 2 Sundays ago, look, I want to go in there. And Trump seemed to say, okay, well, I don't want you to, but I'm not going to stop you and we're going to get our troops out. What I think he should have done was said, sorry, no, we're not going to accede to that. And if you do, we control the airspace and we can stop you. And I think that Erdogan would have backed down. Instead, it's Trump that looks like he's backed down.
Right. Or even if he was trying to fulfill a campaign promise and he wanted to get out, there's a process to put a decision like that through that raises issues, questions that are going to come up. I mean, the shelling is just one example where, you know, Turkish forces were firing artillery shells reportedly, a few hundred yards from American troops there. Meanwhile, there's reporting that says the Department of State and the Department of Energy were frantically reviewing their plans for taking the tactical nuclear weapons that we have stored in Turkey at an airbase there out of Turkey, as this this relationship with a NATO ally seems to be degenerating. But as far as walking it back, I mean, that's the way I read this imposition of sanctions on Turkey, raising steel tariffs. You know, on one hand, Trump talks about how Syria is 7,000 miles away. This isn't our problem. But in order to put these sanctions on, he is now declaring a national emergency. So there's a national emergency related to the situation in Syria, which is 7,000 miles away, and we don't need to deal with it all. I mean, the only way that to interpret that, I think, is that he's recognized that this is a mistake and he's trying to walk it back.
Politically, in particular, he's trying to hold off much more aggressive sanctions on Capitol Hill that Lindsey Graham and some others are pushing against Turkey. And I think he realizes some of the political damage here. So he's trying to say, look, I didn't give Erdogan a green light. In a sense, in that sense, the sanctions are cover, political cover. And I should add that while it may sound like 50% tariffs on steel is severe, and it is, a lot of the sanctions here have a lot of waiver authority, and they're not as tough as they sound.
Yeah, look, I don't believe that sanctions can substitute for a strong foreign policy. They can support a strong foreign policy. I think this is the president wanting to say he's being tough when he isn't. Look, throughout history, we've had this similar problems. Remember, the Korean War started after Dean Acheson suggested South Korea was outside our sphere of influence, right? And a couple of years later, not that long, there's
a couple of months,
months,
weeks
later, right? we have all these Jong-il, troops over there fighting bloody wars. Same thing in Iraq. April Glaspie, remember George H.W. Bush's ambassador, kind of said these things. So we have these interests everywhere. I also think this is this in particular, these troops in particular, there weren't that many. And I think John Bolton was the
couple
last
hundred
line
most.
Of, was the last line of defense. And I think the two things that come from Bolton's leaving is one, this. I don't think this would have happened if John had still been there, or he would have resigned if it had gone through, because they tried it once before. But also the tragedy of that is that John Bolton offered the president a very smart version of America First that wasn't just, I mean, John Bolton wasn't a neocon, wasn't about spreading democracy and all this. He was a hard-headed realist who wanted to avoid wars and to contain Iran, contain North Korea, and avoid wars. And I think the president really lost a lot in this disarray. You know, as much as you saw arguments during John Bolton's time, you didn't see the disarray that you have now. I think that, that's the real tragedy, because I think Bolton offered the president something he really could have used from his own point of view.
Events are dynamic. We don't know how this is going to play out, but it does look as if Russia now is playing a much more aggressive role in policing that northern part of Syria on behalf of Bashar Assad, the president of Syria. It looks like the Iranians are very happy here, because the extent to which the Americans get out makes it easier for them to consolidate their positions, expand their positions in the southern part of Syria, close to the Israeli border, and in the east, where there are some oil assets that they would love to get their hands on, Kyle.
Yeah, and that's a problem. I mean, maybe less of a problem from President Trump's perspective. I mean, he seems happy to let them fight it out. But as far as, I mean, the real issue that is uniting the left and the right, it seems to me, is the immediate pullout without any real thought or notice that has destabilized the situation, you know, leading to the jailbreaks of these ISIS-connected prisoners. I mean, that's a real issue, even if you are an America First, Fortress America type person. I mean, that's a problem that he has to figure out a way to deal with as best he can now, you know, a week and a half later.
We're talking about Syria and a preview of the Democratic debate, and you are listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kyle Peterson. And just to finish up on the Syria question, another aspect of this is domestic political support for the president. And my sense is that this has been something of a jolt to Republicans on Capitol Hill, particularly in the Senate, because they tend to be realists and believe in American global leadership. And this looks much more close to Rand Paul's foreign policy than Mitch McConnell's foreign policy to choose two Kentucky Republican senators, Bill. And I wonder if this is not going to erode support for the president over time inside the Senate. I'm not saying that this is going to coax them to vote to convict Donald Trump if he is impeached, but it is, I think, putting a lot of doubt in Republican minds about the president's mercurial and sometimes reckless, impulsive decision-making on foreign policy.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Look, the interesting thing, as Kyle pointed out about this, is that this move was not just criticized by Democrats and Republicans that have never liked Donald Trump. You know, Pat Robertson speaking for the evangelicals because of the Christian communities that are vulnerable there. Lindsey Graham, who's been a stalwart defender of the president. There's a lot of across-the-board criticism, both for the consequences, also for, you know, what a lot of people view as selling out the Kurds who have been with us in every war. They deserve better. You know, I think Rand Paul, you mentioned Rand Paul, I think at one point Rand Paul said, you know, if they do the fighting against ISIS, we should give them their own country and everything. But the logic of the Rand Paul position is to, you know, to abandon people.
You think we're intervening now?
Yeah. And I also think it's not just the political undermining of the president. Look, he's engaged in three if you count the China sanctions, but two big security operations, one in North Korea and one in Iran. And he's drawn bright red lines. Iran must not get a nuclear weapon, and North Korea must not get the capacity to attack us. When you look at this, a lot of people that are willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, let him negotiate, let him go, because he's taken a strong line. This is going to erode some of the confidence that those situations are going to resolve themselves in a way that's better for America, as opposed to the usual Korean solution is where they promise something and then a couple of years later you find out that they violated it.
I would add that I think this episode is going to open up an attack line for the Democratic presidential candidate, whoever that person is, potentially a serious one. All right, let's turn, in fact, to the presidential debate Tuesday evening, 8 to 11 on CNN. Among all the Democratic, a dozen Democratic contenders who will be on the stage, who qualified according to the latest Democratic National Committee criteria. First time, Kyle, the stage will have Elizabeth Warren as the actual front runner. She's still close in the polls to Biden, but she's emerged as having a lead in some of the in many of the polls. And I wonder how that will change the dynamics on stage.
Yeah. So this is going to be the biggest presidential debate ever, I believe. 12 candidates on stage. So you have to expect a lot of crosstalk. But in that, one of the things that I'm looking for, at least, is whether anybody is going to go after Elizabeth Warren in a serious way. She has sort of skated up the middle so far. I mean, there's been a lot of attacks on Biden as the front runner.
Not ideologically, you're talking about up the middle.
No. I mean, in between Biden and Sanders. So on one hand, there's been a lot of attacks on Biden, who's the front runner. On the other hand, there have been a lot of attacks on Sanders's policies, which are the furthest left of anybody on the stage. And Elizabeth Warren, meanwhile, has sort of skated in between those without drawing a lot of fire herself. Another interesting thing that I'm going to be watching out for is what some of these other minor candidates have to say. So there are four of these guys who have not qualified for the next debate. The next debate, to qualify, you need four polls at 3%, I believe. Beto O'Rourke has one. Amy Klobuchar has one. Tulsi Gabbard has zero. And Julian Castro has zero. So if they're going to break out and make a run for that, they're going to have to do something tonight, and we'll see what that might be.
Elizabeth Warren, so far I agree with Kyle. A bill has kind of skated past any significant criticism. The closest you could argue has come from some of the Democrats who won't be on stage anymore. They didn't qualify, John Delaney and Tim Ryan, of her health care plans. Implicitly, Joe Biden attacking Warren's Medicare for All plan because it would do away with private insurance. Warren has so far, but even escaped the having to answer the question of whether middle class taxes will have to go right. up with Medicare for All. And Bernie Sanders bluntly says, yes, they will. And nobody has actually forced her to actually answer that question, which is fundamental.
Yeah. Actually, the man who came closest to getting an answer was Stephen Colbert, who pressed her on this. And,
the late-night TV host.
I think he asked her six or seven times. She didn't answer. And he finally said, here's the best answer from your point of view. Yes, taxes will go up, but you'll be better off because you'll gain more in good health care and so forth. But she won't say that. Look, I think tonight Joe Biden has to have a good night. I think the Hunter Biden thing is hurting him. I think that's why Hunter Biden was on TV. I don't think the angry look that Joe Biden expresses, this has been looked into before, is going to work. I think there are questions about Joe Biden pressuring news outlets not to report it. And I think that they have to ask him a tough question. The moderators have to ask him, what were the Ukrainians paying for? If it's not expertise in Ukraine, not expertise in energy, what were they buying when they bought that name? And it's a fair political question. The question I think you raised before is the person who would benefit most from this is Elizabeth Warren, right? But we saw from the last debate when Julian Castro tried to make Joe Biden's age an issue, he really got slammed down because they basically say you're all doing Trump's dirty work. But maybe one of the minor cast will raise it just as a Hail Mary, because most of them, when you get past Bernie, Biden, and Elizabeth Warren, they're down in the 5 or 6% range. So they really need a breakout kind of moment.
And a fellow who has to show well, too, Kyle, Bernie Sanders. He's been falling in the polls. His recent heart attack a couple of weeks ago raises questions inevitably about his health and age at, what is he, 76 now, I think, or 77. He's going to be 77. He is... he has to show, I think, some vigor on stage, look like he's actually well on the way to recovery. And then he needs to do something, I guess, to try to blunt the progress of Elizabeth Warren, who has been essentially slipstreaming his ideas from 2016, copying them, adding something here or there. And benefiting from the fact that she's got his ideas, but a fresher face and a different voice.
Yeah, and he's trying to do that already. So this weekend he was on TV and he was saying, you know, I know Elizabeth. I think she's a good senator, but she says she's a capitalist to her bones and I'm not. Trying to make the distinction that he's the real socialist running in 2020. And she, however many of his positions she's adopted, she's still a capitalist. I just am not sure how broadly that message appeals. And he's already dropped a little bit and that has totally reshaped the race. I mean, so Joe Biden has done a little bit of attacks on these ideas. In the last debate, he was, I forget if it was a combination of Warren's health plan, Harris's health plan, Kamala Harris's health plan, and Bernie's health plan.
And I think, Bernie's, but also I think Booker is on board for Medicare for All as well.
Yep. So he's gone after that a little bit, but it's always in this way where there is several candidates on stage who matter, and he's switching who he's talking about. Whereas now it really is a race where Biden's maybe at 30 or 25, Warren is up there matching him, and everybody else has pretty much fallen away. I think Sanders is still in double digits, but it's not a close third anymore. anymore. And her rise is notable in that in the Quinnipiac polling, she's gone up about 10% among moderates, Democratic moderates. She's gone up about 10% among Black voters, which has been one of Biden's core strengths. So he can, I mean, he really needs to concentrate his fire, I think.
I think Elizabeth Warren, Bill, might be very happy if Bernie Sanders said on the national debate stage, I'm a socialist and she's a capitalist, because if, in my opinion, viewing their platforms.
Right.
This is a distinction that is largely rhetorical.
Right. There's no real difference here. It's just what you label it, you know, put on the outside. And I think Elizabeth Warren's actually quite smart to label hers her way and avoid the attacks on socialism. Look, it's going to be an interesting night. The other thing we haven't addressed is, you know, some of these debates have been ads for the Republican Party, in-kind contributions, like the first one when they asked, how many of you guys are for free health care for illegal immigrants? And they all raise their hands. One of those issues is Beto O'Rourke, which we wrote about in the editorials, and his threat to lift all tax exemptions for churches. Some of the candidates have distanced themselves from him. And that will certainly come up tonight. It's an opportunity for some of these other people to look more moderate by distancing themselves from him.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with a report on what the Democrats talked about. Thanks for listening.